the diamond enhancer fall into her lap, she took the ring from Grace and threaded the chain through it, and then clasped the necklace on Grace. "You look like a princess," Jude said, kissing her granddaughter's cheek. And once she'd begun kissing Grace, she couldn't stop. She kissed and nuzzled and snuggled until Gracie cried out for mercy, yelling, "Stop it, Nana, that tickles!" and giggling. Finally, Jude drew back and looked at Grace. "I love you. I should have told you that a million times a day." Grace giggled again and covered her mouth. "That's a lot of times." "Don't try to quiet your laughter, Gracie. It's a beautiful sound."
"That's what my mommy said."
Mommy. How was it that an ordinary word, one she'd heard all of her life, could suddenly be so sharp? "You used to be the best mother in the world." Regret was all around Jude. She felt choked by it. But then she looked down at the girl in her arms, and she could breathe again. The regret melted slowly away, was replaced by a fragile shoot of hope. "Your mom has a heart as big as Alaska. I forgot that. And she made my Mia, and your dad, happy."
"What's that?"
Grace asked, pointing at the book in Jude's other hand. She hadn't even realized she was still holding it. "It's your Aunt Mia's diary."
"You aren't supposed to read stuff like that. Hannah Montana says..."
"It's okay."
"'Cause she's dead?"
Jude drew in a sharp breath, waiting for a pain that didn't quite come. It was there, of course, in that one awful word. But it left quickly, and she was surprised to find that she could still smile. And maybe it was better to face a thing, to say it out loud, rather than to hide it away. "Yeah. Now it's something she left for us."
"What was she like, Nana?"
Grace asked. And Jude wondered how long Grace had held that question back, afraid to ask it of anyone in her family. "She was like a beautiful, fragile flower. Until she met your mom, she was afraid of her own shadow and lonely. So lonely." She wiped her eyes. She wanted to be an actress, and I think she could have made it. All those quiet years weren't wasted. Mia was always watching people, soaking up the world around her. When she got on stage, she was a different girl completely. Your mom helped her with that. It was Lexi who talked Mia into trying out for her first play. Miles appeared in the doorway.
"What's this? You two look like you're having a party without me."
"We are, Papa," Grace said, scrambling to her feet. She ran across the bed and launched herself into Miles's open arms. "Nana was telling me about Aunt Mia," Grace said, "and look what my mommy gave me."
She held out the promise ring on the chain.
"She was telling you about Mia?"
Miles asked, looking at Jude. Over Grace's golden hair, their eyes met, and a quiet understanding passed between them. They both knew what it meant to simply say Mia's name. He got up into his daughter's bed and eased close to them, putting an arm around Jude. "How have you been so strong?" she asked him.
"Strong?"
He sighed, and in the sound, she heard the wellspring of his loss.
"I'm not strong anymore," he said. "But thank God, I'm patient."
"I'm sorry," she said quietly. Grace wiggled around until she was wedged between them. Then she sat up. Her pointed chin jutted out.
"Won't Daddy be mad that Mommy gave me this ring?"
And suddenly Jude got it. She knew why Lexi had given Grace the ring. Something important to do before I leave. Lexi hadn't just left Grace for the day. The ring meant goodbye. Lexi pedaled up Main Street and parked her bike in front of Scott's office. He was at his desk, talking on the phone. At her entrance, he smiled and held up a finger. "Wait,"
he mouthed. Don't go. She sat down on the sofa in the office, waiting. As soon as he hung up, she got to her feet and headed toward the desk.
I made a mistake, she said,
standing in front of him. He paused in gathering his papers and looked up. What do you mean?
You know what Grace said to me? I'm already a mom. I should know how to be one. But I don't. I have no idea how to be my daughter's mommy. I don't have a job or a place to live, anything. I'm not ready. All I did by coming back was hurt them again, hurt Grace.
Lexi, you can't give up.
I'm not going to give up. I still want to modify the custody agreement, and I want to be Grace's mom. I want that more than anything. But I have to do it the right way. I have to do what's best for her, not what's best for me.
Her voice fell away. All she could do was shrug.
I spent 3 days trying to find a job. Apparently, a 24-year-old ex-con can't even be a part-time janitor. And forget about housing. At best, I can rent a room in someone's house. I'll have to work 70 hours a week just to live. How do I take care of Grace? How?
Lexi.
Please, she whispered. Don't make it harder, okay? I appreciate all you've done for me, but I'm going to Florida tomorrow morning. Eva got me a job. I'll be able to save up enough to come back in a year. My bus leaves at 9:25.
Oh, Lexi, Scott said. I wish you'd listen to me.
Make sure they send me pictures, she said quietly, trying not to cry. I'll write to her every week.
He went to her then, took her in his arms. She had a hard time letting go.
Thank you for everything, she finally said.
What about Zach? Scott asked.
The question hurt so much she didn't even try to respond.
Do you need a ride to the bus station tomorrow?
No.
The last thing she wanted was to tell him goodbye again.
I've got it covered. I left Jenny's suit in the conference room. Tell her thanks for me.
You can tell her yourself. Come to dinner tonight.
Okay, but there's something I have to do later.
Do you need help?
No. I need to do it alone.
Jude sat on the sofa in Zach's quiet living room. She hadn't bothered turning on any lights, so the lavender evening crept through the windows. A fire danced orange in the black hearth, and for once, she felt warmed by it. Every now and then she heard a giggle coming from down the hall, where Miles and Grace were playing something on the Wii. Grace was like a light that had suddenly been switched on. She talked nonstop, and she hadn't told a lie all afternoon. Jude had no doubt that the last few hours with her granddaughter would become one of the anchor memories of this new part of their family's life, the start of after. But even as she'd joined in, Jude had felt a rising sense of urgency. There was more to be done, she knew, more wrongs to right. Finally, at about 7, the front door opened and Zach walked in, with his heavy backpack hanging off one shoulder. You're late, Jude said, rising to her feet.
The test was a bitch, he said, tossing his backpack.
He looked utterly exhausted.
I think I blew it.
You have a lot on your mind.
You think?
I tried calling you.
My phone died. Sorry.
She got up from the sofa and stood there, staring at him in silence. Even now, she wasn't sure quite how to say all the things that had been on her mind. The last few days had been so startling. She felt like a glacier that had begun slowly to melt and move again.
I stopped by the lawyer's office, too, he said,
meeting her gaze.
I agreed to the modified parenting plan. It's done. I know you won't like it, but I can't hurt Lexi anymore. I won't. And if she needs to have Grace by herself for a while, I'm going to say yes.
He paused and then said quietly, I shouldn't have gotten drunk. If I had stayed sober... Don't, Zach. You can't run this thing, Mom. I know how much you care about everything, but this is about me and Lexi and Grace. I have to do what's right.
I know, she said. It was time. And I'm proud of you. They were like soldiers who'd fought on a common battlefield, she and her son. There were things to say, but they were just words, and they would come in time. What mattered was that they had survived, and that there was still love between them and around them. Everything else was a postscript. There was really only one thing she needed to say to him now, one question to ask. Do you still love her? Zach seemed to crumble at that. In his eyes, she saw both a fragile youth and a terrible maturity.
I've always loved her. I never even tried not to.
She gathered her son in her arms and held him as she should have years ago, when he was young and hurting and afraid. She wished she'd known then what mattered most. I love you like air, Zach. He held her tightly.
I love you too, Madre.
It was the first time he'd called her that in years, and with that little endearment, she melted more, moved just that much closer to who she'd been. She drew back slowly. I think she's leaving tomorrow. Going to Florida, maybe.
Why?
She thinks Grace will be better off without her.
But that's crazy.
Lexi has always tried to do what was right for everyone else. That's who she is, isn't it? I should have remembered that, Zach. How much Lexi meant to us. To me. Zach looked at her. She saw both hope and worry in his eyes. Hope that she meant it, and worry that she didn't.
What are you saying?
Go find her, Zach. Tell her how you feel. She pushed the hair from his eyes and smiled. She's a part of our family. She needs to know that.
She won't care, Mom. I let her go to prison.
You can't claim all the blame, Zach.
Enough of it. How could she forgive me?
Can you forgive me for being such a bad mom in the last few years?
There's no need.
That's how we do it, Zach. We just forgive. I used to worry that you and Lexi were too young for love, and I still think of you as young. But you're not, are you? None of us are. And life doesn't take the straight road.
Where is she?
I don't know that. Zach gave her a hug and then hurried out of the cabin. She was still in the open doorway, staring at the empty driveway, when she felt Miles come up beside her. He put an arm around her.
He went to find Lexi?
Yep.
Change comes fast.
It can. She turned into him, slipped her hands around his waist, and gave him a kiss. It was a quiet miracle, really, the durability of their love.
Nana! Papa! Grace slipped between them like a little eel. Let's play Candyland. Nana can be Queen Frostine.
Your Nana doesn't play.
Miles started.
I'd love to play Candyland again, Jude said.
It was strange how a sentence could freeze something inside of you, such a little thing. They sat around the coffee table in front of the fire. After two rounds, Jude got up and made dinner, and they talked all through the meal. Jude was just finishing the dishes when the front door burst open, and Zach walked in.
I couldn't find her, he said,
looking miserable and pissed off. He tossed his car keys on the entry table.
I don't even know where to look.
Grace ran to him, and he picked her up, kissing her cheek.
Hey, Daddy, look what my mommy gave me.
She held out the ring. Jude thought her son was going to crumple to his knees right there.
The promise ring, he said,
letting Grace slide down to the floor.
She didn't want it anymore.
Daddy?
He walked over to the window, stared out at the dark sound.
Where could she be?
Who?
Grace said, coming up beside him, putting her hand in his back pocket.
I looked at the park, at that place in the woods by her old trailer. I looked in every window downtown. I even went to the cemetery and the place on Knight Road. It's like she vanished.
He turned to Jude.
Did she say anything?
Jude tried to remember. She'd been so focused on the journal she'd barely been listening to Lexi. Another mistake to atone for.
I think she said something about a last goodbye, something she should have done a long time ago. I should have stopped her. I should have...
A goodbye?
Yeah, that's right. She said she had one last thing to do. A goodbye she should have said a long time ago.
Zack grabbed his keys and ran out of the house.
Lexi tried to wait until midnight, but she couldn't do it. She was anxious, sick to her stomach about what she had to do. Finally, at about 9:30, she couldn't stand it anymore. She left Scott's warm, love-filled home and rode the bicycle out to La Riviere Park. There she stood at the water's edge, the sound of waves whooshing forward, reaching for her and receding, would forever remind her of first love. But finally, it was time to go. She walked the bike up the hill and pedaled onto the main road. Even this late on a summer's night, Main Street was full of people milling about, and Lexi dodged between and around with the ease of a local girl in a tourist town. A faded melancholy assailed her as she passed the places that would forever define her youth. She would always remember the girl she'd been on this main street, the girl who laughed with her best friend and waited for the boy in a white Mustang. On Beach Drive, she slowed down and coasted up to the Faradays' driveway. Hiding her bike in the salal, she stayed close to the tree line until she was close enough to see that the house lights were off. No one was home. Breathing a sigh of relief, she walked down the driveway and around the side of the house. Night claimed the backyard. A single porch light glowed above one of the doors, splashed light onto the glittery gray stone patio. Moonlight illuminated the waves and turned the grassy lawn blue. She eased past the barbecue area and around the pair of chaise loungers that overlooked the sound. Flicking on her flashlight, she pointed a beam of yellow light toward the giant cedar tree that guarded this bit of land from the encroaching water. At the base of the tree, she scanned the ground with her flashlight, wondering exactly where she should dig first.
We should have used a marker, she said to the ghosts of the kids they'd been. It'll be a pact. We'll always be friends. Never say goodbye.
They should never have buried the stupid thermos, should never have let themselves get so caught up in nostalgia. Or maybe she simply shouldn't have remembered it. Who could have known how heavy a pact could become, how precise a promise could seem? She dropped slowly to her knees, feeling the shock of cold sand on her bare skin. She dug through the sand, pushing mounds of it to one side and then the other. It wasn't here. She dug faster, feeling desperation rise. She had to dig this up, had to say goodbye to Zack.
Is this what you're looking for?
She heard his voice in the darkness, and when she looked up, there he was, standing at the edge of the trees. She must have walked right past him.
I guess you've beat me to it.
She got awkwardly to her feet.
You can't have it, he said. It stays, just like the promise we all made.
That promise died in a car on Knight Road, she said.
Did it?
He moved toward her slowly.
Stay away from me, Zack, please.
Why?
Words were impossible with him this close. She started to turn away.
Don't go,
he said. He couldn't know what those words did to her.
Don't, Zack. It's too late. I can't take it again. Just let me go. Say goodbye. Throw the thermos in the sound.
I miss her, he said.
and Lexi felt the start of tears. How was it they had never had this conversation? She started to say how sorry she was, but he shook his head and said, "But I miss you too, Lexi."
Zach.
She could barely see him through her tears now, but she wouldn't wipe them away.
"I don't see how you could forgive me. I can't forgive myself. And I'll get it if you hate me. But Lex, oh man, I'm so sorry."
"You're sorry. I killed your sister."
He looked at her. She saw how uncertain he was, how afraid.
"Could you ever love me again?"
She stared at this blurry version of him, shadows and moonlight, and remembered the first time he'd kissed her, the first time he'd held her hand, the day he'd stood up in court and said he was guilty too, the day he'd taken their daughter in his arms. It was all between them in this instant, the good, the exceptional, the sad, the horrific. Everything that they'd been as kids, and the adults they were trying to be now. She could no more deny loving him than she could carry weights into the sound and drown herself. Some things simply were in life, and her love for him was one of those things. It didn't matter that they were young, or that there were a dozen reasons for them to be apart. It only mattered that his blood had somehow found its way into her veins, and without him, she was lost.
"I do love you," she said quietly. "I tried to stop."
He took her in his arms and kissed her. At the touch of his lips, so sweetly, achingly familiar, she felt as if her soul, bound in chains for years, broke free. Stretched for the first time and opened its wings. She was flying, soaring. She clung to him, crying at last for the best friend she'd killed, and the years she'd lost in prison, and the daughter whose babyhood would forever be hidden from her. This moment was more than she'd ever dared to hope for, and the love she'd tried so hard to extinguish overwhelmed her. She drew back and stared at him in wonder. Tears spiked his lashes, made him look impossibly young again, like the boy she'd given her heart to all those years ago, on a night like this, with the lights of the highway rushing past them.
"How?"
was all she could say, but she knew he understood. How could they go back, really?
"I love you so much, Lexi," he said. "That's all I know."
"So, what do we do? How do we start?"
He handed her the dirty thermos as carefully as if it were an artifact from a lost civilization, which, in a way, it was.
"We keep our promise."
Lexi held the time capsule in her hands, picturing the gold earrings, the St. Christopher's medal, and the fraying friendship bracelet within. Lexi felt Mia with them, in the warm summer breeze, in the rustling of the trees, in the steady heartbeat of waves. She kissed the sandy curve of the thermos and buried it again. When she was done, she patted the sand in place.
"She's here,"
Lexi said, feeling her best friend beside her for the first time in years. Zach finally smiled.
"She always will be."
Then he took her hand and they stood up.
"Come home with me, Lexi,"
he said, and all she could do was nod. "Home." They walked quietly back to the house and she thought, "This is how we do it. This is how we talk to our daughter, holding hands." The next morning, Grace woke up early. In her footed pink jammies, she walked sleepily down the narrow hallway to her daddy's bedroom, dragging her yellow blankie along behind her. His door was closed. That was weird. She pushed the door open and started to say,
Wake up, sleepyhead.
But all she got out was,
"What?"
Mommy was in bed with Daddy. They were kinda stuck together, sleeping. Grace got a little flutter in her heart. Her mommy was here. She shuffled forward and climbed up on the bed, squirming between them. Before she could say anything, her daddy started tickling her, and she giggled until she couldn't breathe. Then she lay there, between her mommy and daddy, feeling like crying, even though she didn't know why.
"Are you okay with me being here, Gracie?"
her mommy asked.
"I thought you were leaving."
"Your daddy changed my mind," Mommy said.
"Is that okay with you, Grace? Can I live with you guys?"
Grace giggled at that. She felt so happy she forgot to cover her mouth.
"Of course it's okay."
After that, Grace had a lot to tell her new mommy. She talked nonstop until the alarm beside Daddy's bed rang. Then she sat up suddenly and said,
"I gotta go to school. It's the last day. Will you drive me, Mommy?"
"I don't drive," her mom said, looking nervously at Daddy.
"That's weird," Grace said. "All mommies know how to drive."
"I'll get my license back," Mommy said. "By first grade, I'll be ready. Now, how about breakfast? I'm starving." Grace launched herself onto Daddy's back, and he carried her into the kitchen, plopping her down in her seat at the table. All the time she was eating, she couldn't help staring at her mommy. She could tell that Daddy couldn't help himself either. It felt like being a family. And Grace could think of a lot more to say to her mommy now. Through breakfast and out to the car, Grace talked. She told Mommy about how bendable Barbie was, and how cool Hannah Montana and Cinderella were, and how long she could hold her breath. And before she knew it, she said,
"And I can water ski like Ashley Hammerow."
They were in the car now, driving to school. Mom turned in her seat and looked at Grace. "Is that true?"
"It could be."
"But is it?" Grace slumped in her car seat.
"No."
It was hard to only tell the truth. How would anyone like her for who she really was? At school, Dad pulled out of the carpool lane and parked under the big trees off to the side of the school.
"Can I walk you into class?"
Mommy asked. Grace got that fluttery feeling again. She smiled.
"You could be my show and tell."
Mommy smiled.
"I'd like that."
They walked through the crowd of children, and Grace started to feel sick. Mommy was going to notice that she had no friends. But all the way to the classroom door, Mommy held her hand, and when they got there, she knelt down and looked at Grace.
"You remember what I told you about my best friend, Mia?"
Grace nodded. She wanted to suck her thumb, but the kids would just make fun of her for that. "I was so scared the day I met her. It was the first day of school, and no one liked me. I ran out of the lunchroom because I couldn't sit with anyone. And then I saw this other girl sitting all by herself, and I just went up to her and started talking. That's how we became best friends." "You have to take a chance, Grace. Talk to someone."
"Okay, Mommy."
Mommy pulled Grace into a fierce hug and kissed her cheek. "I'll be here to pick you up when school's over."
"Promise?"
"I promise," her mommy said. Grace looked nervously into the classroom, where kids were busy doing all kinds of things. She saw Samantha standing by the cubbies, all by herself.
"Go on."
Grace looked down at her wrist. She saw a flash of yellow and heard a sound that was like laughing, or maybe like the waves in front of Nana's house.
"I'm scared,"
she whispered to Ariel.
"What should I say?" "You know what to say. You don't need me anymore, Grace Arena." "I do. Don't go."
Grace started to panic. Her cheeks got hot. She was afraid she was going to cry.
"Go on, Grace Arena. You have your mommy now. trust her.
Don't be afraid, Grace, her mommy said, patting her butt. Go on in. Grace looked at her mom one last time and then walked into the classroom. Her heart was beating like crazy. Taking a deep breath, she walked over to Samantha and just stood there beside her.
My mommy came home last night, she said, finally.
Samantha turned to her.
The spy? She's not really a spy. What is she?
Grace shrugged.
Oh, you want to sit by me today?
Grace said, biting her lip.
Are you going to punch me?
No.
Do you like hopscotch?
Samantha finally said.
'Cause I do. Yeah,
Grace said, smiling. It was a lie. Really, she didn't know how to play hopscotch, but she wanted to learn. And anyway, she didn't think it was a bad lie.
I love hopscotch.
The day woke Jude gently. She lay in bed with Miles, feeling his body along hers, hearing the catch in his breathing that meant he would soon start snoring. She kissed his stubbly cheek and peeled back the covers to get out of bed. Through her bedroom windows, she saw a brilliant salmon-pink sun rise above the steel-blue Sound, and for the first time in years, she went in search of a camera. Standing outside in her terry-cloth robe and bare feet, she took several pictures of the sunrise and her own backyard. It looked new to her all of a sudden. Dew sparkled on the dense green lawn and on the stone patio. She thought about the parties they used to have in this backyard, the laughter that used to fill it, and she hungered for a time like that again. She'd bought that huge outdoor table for her future, assuming always that she would have grandkids clustered around it one day. It hadn't been used in years. She walked purposefully outside and pulled the plastic covering off the table, exposing it to the sunlight again. Then the garden caught her eye. In bare feet, she walked across the dewy grass and stared down at her runaway garden. Everything was a mess. The rows she'd once clipped so carefully were impossible to distinguish in the riot of color. There were flowers everywhere, blooming in spite of her absence, their colorful blossoms tangling up with one another. Before, she would have seen disorder here, plants that grew where they weren't supposed to and bloomed with abandon. She would have gone in search of her tools, clippers and trowels and stakes, and set about the task of recreation. Now, though, on this bright, late June morning, she saw what she hadn't seen before. There was a beauty in chaos, a wildness that hinted at things gone wrong and mistakes overcome. She stood there a long time, just looking down at her ruined and yet still beautiful garden. Finally, she knelt in the grass and began pulling up weeds. When she'd cleared a space, she got shakily to her feet. It was a start. She went to her glass-sided greenhouse, where once she'd poured her heart and soul into trays filled with black soil. Things were forgotten in here, draped in cobwebs. A watering system had kept everything alive, and plants, like people, learned to grow in rocky terrain. Up on a high shelf in the back, she found what she was looking for. A small white packet of wildflower seeds. She'd bought them years ago, from a friend of Mia and Zach's who'd been selling them outside of Safeway, for a trip somewhere, she thought. Taking the packet of seeds from the shelf, she walked out and stood in the center of her runaway garden. She poured the mismatched seeds into her palm and stared down at them, reminded of how small things were at the beginning. With a smile, she threw the seeds across the garden. Someday, she would be surprised by what would grow from these seeds, and someday, she would plant that long-forgotten white rose right there, where Mia had lost her first tooth. Returning to the house, she made a pot of coffee. The smoky, roasted scent of it filled the house, drew Miles stumbling into the kitchen with his hand outstretched, mumbling,
coffee.
She handed him a cup, black. Here you go.
You're an angel.
Speaking of that...
Speaking of what?
Angels. Miles frowned.
You know I have trouble before coffee, but were we talking about angels?
I'm going to the cemetery today, she said quietly. I decided yesterday.
You want me to come with you?
She loved him for asking. This is something I need to do by myself.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Call me when you get home?
Afraid I'll throw myself in some open hole? He kissed her and drew back.
Been there, done that. Not worried anymore. You've come back.
Call me Frodo.
Not Frodo. Sam. Sam came home and got married and had a life.
You're right. I'm Sam. She stood by him in the kitchen for the next half hour, sipping coffee and talking. When he left her and headed for the shower, she was struck by the extraordinariness of it all. That they could stand around and talk about little things again. A potential dinner party, the newest coffee maker, a movie that was getting good reviews. She had gone a whole hour without thinking about her heartache. That might not sound like much to some people, but to her, it was monumental, like swimming the English Channel. It offered her a glimpse of something she'd given up on, the possibility of being herself again, of even someday being happy with her life. She knew she could never let go of her sadness, but maybe Harriet was right. Maybe she could go on. Maybe time didn't heal wounds exactly, but it gave you a kind of armor or a new perspective, a way to remember with a smile instead of a sob. Maybe someday, when a stranger asked how many children she had, she could simply say one and talk about Zach. God, she hoped so. She met Miles in the bathroom and went into the shower as he was coming out. He patted her bare butt, and she smiled and scooted out of his reach and ducked into the hot water. She was rinsing the conditioner out of her hair when the glass door opened.
You sure you're going to be okay?
Miles said again. I'm fine. Call Zach and remind them that we're going to the zoo tomorrow. Mom is meeting us there. Miles paused, and she knew him well enough to recognize that he was thinking about something. What? She said, stepping out of the shower, wrapping a towel around her body.
We had a pretty big anniversary a few years ago. We didn't celebrate it. We didn't celebrate any of them. After.
We'll do better this year. Dinner at Canlis. He held out a familiar blue velvet box. She was shaking as she reached out for the small, soft box. The velvet was worn on top. That was how often she'd held it, but she hadn't touched it in years. Releasing a deep breath, she flipped open the lid. On a bed of stark white, Mia's graduation ring stood up proudly, the gold glinting in the light. The once empty prongs had been filled with a sparkling pink diamond. Jude looked up at this man she loved, and the full power of that emotion, of their commitment, surged through her like a tide carrying her home. He knew her better than she knew herself. He knew that she needed this reminder of their daughter, something Jude could wear, see, every day. I love you, Miles Faraday. He touched her face, smiling.
You're a warrior. You know that.
I wish. He kissed her again, whispered.
Tell her hi for me.
And then went back into the bedroom. After he left for work, she dried her hair and dressed in a pair of old, comfortable jeans and a white hoodie. Ordinarily, she'd take the time to put on makeup, but today, she didn't feel the need to hide anything. She was who she was, a woman who'd survived a war of the heart and had the wrinkles to prove it. She meant to leave right away, but somehow she couldn't do it. She spent the next few hours doing chores, picking things up around the house, doing laundry, making a casserole for dinner. Stalling. Finally, at just after 1 o'clock, she drew in a deep breath and stopped moving. It's time, Jude. Now. Slinging a purse over her shoulder, she left the house. As she came to the corner, sunlight skittered along the blue water below and winked from windows along either shore. Such a beautiful, beautiful day. At Knight Road, she slowed down. It had been years since she'd dared to turn onto this stretch of asphalt where her life had changed. It was time to face it at last. She turned and kept driving. Then, after about a half a mile or so, she pulled off to the side of the road and parked. Slowly, she got out of the car and crossed the street. The remnants of the memorial were barely visible. She stood at the hairpin turn. On either side of her, giant evergreens grew clustered together, rising high into the summer sky. Even now, in midday, this winding ribbon of asphalt lay shrouded in mist. She shouldn't stay here long. If someone saw her on this lonely roadside, the talk would start up. People would worry about her. Still, she closed her eyes just for a moment, remembering that night so long ago, when the rain had turned to ash. Letting it go. At last, she returned to her car and drove off the island. It took her less than 30 minutes to reach her destination. That surprised her. Somehow she thought it should have been farther away. It had taken her years to get here, after all. The cemetery was a rolling landscape of manicured lawn, studded with the decorations of death. Headstones, monuments, stone benches. She took a deep breath. Come on, Judith, you can do this. She reached into the back seat for the 3 pink balloons she'd bought at the florist shop yesterday. They banged into the car roof and bounced joyfully. Clutching the strings, she herded them up and left her car. In her mind, she clicked through the directions she'd gotten yesterday, but it didn't really matter. She could have found her child blind. And there was the marker. A smooth granite headstone with an etching of Mia's face in its center. Mia Eileen Faraday, 1986 to 2004. Loving daughter and sister. Never to be forgotten. There was a small gift of life symbol there, too, memorializing the lives she'd saved. Jude held her ridiculous balloons, staring at the image of her daughter's face. Even in granite, Mia's smile shone brightly. I'm sorry it took me so long to get here. I got lost, she finally said, and once she started talking, she couldn't stop. She sat down on a granite bench and told Mia everything. For years, Jude had worried that she would forget her daughter, that time would somehow sand away her memories until nothing solid was left. But now, sitting here in the sunshine, holding her balloons, she remembered everything. How Mia used to suck her thumb and stroke her stuffed puppy's satin paws. How she used to break into a run just before she saw Jude in the carpool lane. How she ate her oranges in sections, tearing away every tiny speck of white. How in a hurry she was to grow up. I bought you this ring a long time ago, Jude said, feeling the tug of both sadness and joy. It was strange how those emotions could coexist at a moment like this. I bought it for an 18-year-old girl who I thought was my future. She stared down at the pink diamond. It sparkled in the sunlight, danced. Every time she looked at this ring, she would remember something about her daughter. Sometimes she would cry, but that was okay, because someday, maybe she would smile, or even laugh. That was something she had learned the past weeks. In the sea of grief, there were islands of grace, moments in time when one could remember what was left, rather than all that had been lost. She stood and released the balloons into the sky. The pink dot swirled and bounced on an invisible current of air, as if an impatient girl had grabbed at them and missed. A sound like laughter came through the trees, and Jude experienced a profound sense of peace. She'd been wrong before. Her daughter was here, with her, inside of her. She'd always been here, even when Jude was too broken to look for her. But it was time now to say, "Goodbye, baby. I love you." For the first time in years, she believed that her daughter could hear her.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Night Road by Kristen Hanna. Copyright 2011 by Kristen Hanna. Performed by Kathleen McInerney. Directed by Cheryl Smith. Performance copyright 2011 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.